Good morning, you guys.
Good evening to you, Jerry.
Good evening, Jerry.
Well, today is tomorrow, but today is today. Today.
Oh, actually, yes, we're all on the same day, aren't we? It's gosh, what day is it today? Thursday.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, isn't it Wednesday? No, you're right. It's Thursday. Today's a big day in the United States. We have.
Yes.
Ooh.
And everybody's going to be anyway.
Everybody's watching. We got an FBI director gonna tattle on the president, maybe. Who knows? Anyways, let's get on with the cool stuff. That's relatively boring compared to what we got. We got WWDC.
Yes, and anybody who's listened to our podcasts over the last 6 months has heard a lot of whinging, particularly from me, about what Apple is not doing for developers and not doing for the professionals. I have to say, in this, it's kind of like they've been listening to our podcasts. In this WWDC keynote, they kind of went through my checklist and went dum 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 dum.
They did.
They did so much with hardware and so much with software that I feel almost like our approach should be, what did they not do? Because even some of although they didn't do my wild idea with the my wild impractical idea with the iMac, they did actually slip in one of the more wild ideas, which was to enable you to attach externally a graphics card. I really laughed when they did that.
Oh.
Yeah, and the whole thing about making the Macs VR capable.
Big deal. Very big deal. That metal stuff they did, you're talking about?
Yeah, very big deal. And they've got Steam on board, and they've got compatibility with HTC Vive hardware already. I think that's huge. That was one of the big things that we all talked about, that the Macs just were not capable of doing. And they now are, or they will be. They either are with the external graphics enclosure, or the what about that iMac Pro? Is that not a dream machine?
Oh, and the color. And I heard the guys on Connected, Mike Hurley said, there's an enclosure you can open and stuff. He said, but I'm afraid it'll bite me.
Yeah, it might do. Yeah. I mean, we've never been in the super pro market. Like, we've never had a Mac Pro or anything, and we won't get this iMac Pro either. But I just think it's such a good sign that Apple is making such a device. I think it's just fantastic. Well, and of course, that technology flows down to the lower end of the spectrum eventually.
It always does. That's the great news here. And plus, they have to take care of professionals, and they have to take care of the high end, because number one, they need it themselves. And number two, you know, all that processing and graphics power and all the great software they have for editing video and audio and AutoCAD, and the list goes on and on, not to mention Xcode. They need that. They need it badly. And now that they've done it and they made the commitment, they called together, you know, all these hotshot reporters and what have you, and it admitted they'd failed with the Mac Pro, which is very unusual. I can't wait to see what the Mac Pro is.
Yeah.
Yes.
If the iMac Pro is such a machine, I think the only place really left for the Mac Pro to go is to be more physically open and physically customizable.
I agree totally. And I think the other thing that's going to happen here is that I believe that the story behind the story is before they had their come to Jesus moment about the Mac Pro, I believe they already had the iMac Pro almost on the line, being ready to be built. So I think this was supposed to be it, but then they got such blowback from about the Mac Pro that I believe they said, well, okay. So this, I think what we're seeing now with the iMac Pro is what the Mac Pro was going to be, but there's also going to be a Mac Pro.
I think so. And this iMac Pro is really a pro machine. That was what we said when the latest MacBook Pro came out, the one with the touch bar. We said, well, they call it pro, but it's not pro.
No.
It doesn't have the performance, doesn't have the specs to be considered a pro machine. So they've kind of undervalued the whole pro brand name.
Quite a bit.
But this iMac Pro really puts it back.
Well, now, again, just we're jumping around a little bit, but I like it. iPad Pro. The iPad Pro, I think, got a huge jump, not just in hardware, but that iOS 11 is what is going to make that little device. Because I have to tell you, did you guys see Federico Vatici's video about what he wanted in iOS 11?
He did. I did. And he's just been, he's been deliriously happy. He's been just going check, 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 check. He can't believe that Apple got so much. And I'll tell you who I feel sorry for, though. And that's the guys who make Spark and Scanner Pro and what are they called? Riddle? That's the guys.
Oh, they worked out a thing with Apple, though, I'm sure.
Yeah, but they had their big announcement just 10 days ago. We've got drag and drop between our own apps. And they had their, and then they had a documents app, which is like files. So they had, you know, they had about a week's worth of glory before they got Sherlocked.
Yeah, but you know what? It was publicity. All publicity is good publicity. They're not getting any negative publicity. And if anything, they're going to get the sorrow vote, and they've got a lot of visibility.
They are getting the sympathy vote, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to get a lot. I think they're okay. And the only reason I believe they were able to get that into the App Store to begin with is because Apple said, we'll let you go with this because we know you guys worked your butts off on it. But you know what? You are going to get Sherlock. As long as you understand that, we'll let this go through. But, you know, in 90 days, you're going to have to do something about this.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But you're certainly right that the iPad has now branched off as a distinct platform, much more positioned more between the iPhone and the iMac rather than being just a big iPhone.
Yes, and this is good because Apple's getting killed with these convertibles, and this will stop that because it's clear now what they're going to do. They're going to make an iPad that is really, really good. And if you like to touch the screen and you like a keyboard, there you are. And I think over time, as this settles in, as iOS 11 gets released, mature, and the developers embrace it, I believe that what we're going to see is we're going to see other keyboards. We didn't see many before, but we're going to see other keyboards that will make that into the convertible that people are looking for, the people who are looking for one. And that'll be third party, of course. But
well, that's an interesting thing about the keyboards, though, because there have always been third party Bluetooth keyboards for the iPads, and they were never really very good. And then with the iPad Pros that came out, what, 18 months ago, Apple produced a keyboard with a sort of proprietary connector,
which they'll license. They will license that.
Well, that's the question. That's what I was getting to. You reckon they will license that to other people?
Absolutely, but nobody bit. You know, I think Apple's biggest problem, and it's the same problem that Google has, they need a guy like Guy Kawasaki. They actually need an evangelist, someone who will give these developers so much love that they will be delirious and they'll do anything for you. That's what they need. Really.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, if we're talking about giving developers love, going back to software developers rather than hardware developers, Xcode 9 is a dream.
So glad to hear.
It solves. I mean, gosh, it practically writes your code for you.
Give us a little taste, Sarah.
Okay. Well, here's a good example of what it can do. Like, if you There's things called delegates, protocols. And when you say, okay, this particular class is going to be a table view controller. And so, it's got to have table view stuff. So I say, okay, this class, I'm labeling it as conforming to the table view protocol.
Right.
Xcode says, oh, you haven't put in the table view protocol functions. Would you like me to do it for you? You say, yes. And there it's written your half your code for you.
Oh my God, that's so beautiful.
I know. Well, you have a switch statement that's switching over a known set of values, like in an enumeration.
Right.
And it just fills it all in for you, fills all in the steps for you.
Yeah, that, and you know, you and I are crazy about development environments, and that is something that I've always thought to myself. Well, I work a lot in a terrible development environment, which is LiveCode. Sorry, guys. But the script editor and autocomplete, it's all decades behind. And I always look to Xcode as to how should we be doing this? And I thought the same thing. I thought, well, why am I writing these the same thing over and over with switch statements and other constructs that are just everyday things? And they can see the code you've already written, and they know what you're about to do if they have any brains at all. Why not do it for you?
Yeah. And the other interesting thing is that Xcode and GitHub are now very tightly linked.
Nice.
Yeah.
Xcode
has always had source control, but not so completely linked to GitHub. So if you have Xcode set up correctly, if you go to a GitHub project on the GitHub website, there'll now be a button that says open in Xcode.
Wow.
And it will download it and open the project in Xcode for you. When you make your own project in Xcode, it knows your GitHub keys and you've given it your GitHub credentials.
Yeah.
And you can without going to GitHub website and creating a new repository or a new project or anything, you just push your project out and it does it all for you.
Oh, this is the way it should be. This is the way God intended it. whether personal
I'm sure
God, impersonal God, multi-God, big G, small G, Yahweh, doesn't matter, man. This is it. We're there. I'm happy.
So this WWDC really feels like Apple has paid attention to what developers actually were whinging about and have answered nearly all their prayers.
Well, this is huge. This is big because, you know, they're striking at the Achilles heel of their big competitor, which is Android. And the fractured ecosystem that they have, they've always been chipping away at that, but now they've really struck it's not a death blow, but it's a serious blow. If you're a developer, Sarah, and you have the choice, and let's throw Microsoft in there, because Microsoft's working their butts off, still, Apple has the money because they have the market and they have the paying customers and they have no fractured, fragmented ecosystem. They're just rolling, and now they got this stuff, and they've got a WWDC where everyone's having religious experiences. So I don't think there's anything that's going to stop them. I think Apple has really, really got the upper hand in this whole thing, and we'll just see how this plays out in the market, which is what I want to talk to Tim about. I want to get his thoughts on, you know, how he sees this rattling things, and the three of us have had good talks about Apple's market share versus mind share versus premium share. There's all kinds of stuff going on here, and there's some great commentators out there that I think we listen to, and I can't wait to hear what some of them have to say after WWDC, because I think there's some games just got changed. Tim, what do you think?
Yes, I think Apple made a very strong presentation in terms of marketing at WWDC. I had an interesting market insight recently, looking at some of the stats, where I had got the impression that the Surface was going extremely well from strength to strength, but apparently their sales numbers fell in the last quarter. And I'm presuming we're talking year over year rather than just seasonal event. And then I also heard some bad feedback about the coverings on some of the Surface products, which apparently aren't very durable.
Yes.
They're sort of a fake leather, I think.
Yeah,
the faux leather. Thing.
Yeah. So I don't think Apple has to worry too much. They're obviously still maintaining their profit margins and so forth.
Oh,
I think it's I've never been particularly well, let me rephrase that. It's been some years since I worried about there being serious competition for Apple. And in fact, of course, for some years, we've kind of hoped that there would be serious competition
right.
for Apple, because that's good for everybody. And yeah. it would it forces down prices and keeps things competitive. And also, it's just statistically not likely that every single good idea in the world is going to appear in Apple's design studios. So
yeah.
so we do want others to do well.
Yes.
I suppose looking at the last 10 years, it was not Apple that had the idea to make iPhones in a large screen version. Steve was quite adamant that
yep.
The 7-inch was whatever it was. No, not the 7-inch. The 4.5-inch was
4.7-inch.
4.7. Yeah, that was all you'd ever need. And I think that if you've got any respect for the market, you would have to say that it was indicated that quite a lot of people wanted larger machines.
I think China and you know Asia in general really drove that stake home, because I mean that Tim Cook listens to China. That's one thing you'd have to say.
Mm.
To a person, those folks like big phones. They don't feel odd carrying one, taking pictures with one, anything, you know. And there, some of them are. Let's just not to get racially insensitive, but a lot of them are smaller people, and they don't care how big the screen. They want a bigger screen. It doesn't matter how little their fingers are, and they got nice little nimble fingers, and they still want it bigger.
I think that what happened was once the web got on the phones, and also YouTube, people realized yeah. that they wanted a bigger screen so they could watch this content on it. Another thing is, of course, that Steve has a reputation for laying down these principles, but quite often he was simply being hard-nosed.
He'll give them up in a blink and act like he never had the other one.
The two famous ones were there was a famous one where he said, you know, who'd want to watch video on a tiny little screen? And that relates to the and then they released the video iPod. And then the other one I'm thinking is that I think
web
he
apps.
Often used to rash
web
apps. He used to rationalize yeah. things yeah. when that was when Tim Cook said to him, we can only get several million screens at 4.7 inches. So that's what it has to be. That's what we've designed for. So
right.
Steve stands up and says, this is the way it should be. This is great. You know, marketing. There's marketing happens.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, borderline the circus kind of promotion. What was the guy, Barnum? Was famous for promotion. That's Steve Jobs was like the circus barker. He would say, you just get out there.
Yeah. Yeah. If necessary, he would sell what he's got. And then next year he would sell what he's got next year and blithely ignore the contradictions mm-hmm. that might happen with the year before. But that's not to be interpreted as running him down. He was multi-skilled, and sometimes one of his skills was just pure marketing.
Also, he had a certain image of himself that was not in any way damaged by totally contradicting himself.
Yes, yes. Quite a bit of ego at work there.
Yeah, it's a gift.
The other thing I really enjoyed was the HomePod. And,
okay.
I had a vision of this all-in device that did everything. And once I saw the HomePod, I thought, yes, that's actually better than my vision. I think it would in fact be a bad move to have stuffed in the AirPort and a backup drive and so forth. That would be a bad idea. If one component goes down, then then you're losing, you run the risk of losing a system in all its aspects. It just didn't make sense. So no, I like the HomePod. We'll be getting a HomePod. Sarah's iPad Pro is arriving next week,
and her,
and her new 21-inch iMac has shipped.
Yeah, one that I was all set to buy last September or something, you know, and it's finally arrived.
Yeah, while you guys are in there buying stuff, buy me a MacBook. That's what I want. Yeah,
our eldest son is getting a MacBook. Yeah, it came just in time. His 7-year-old MacBook Pro just died yesterday. So
my MacBook Air is it's working, but you know it's getting weirder and weirder. I can tell my end of days are near. and you know it's interesting. Now I can buy a MacBook. Base price is the same as the MacBook Pro today.
Yeah.
Why would I buy a MacBook? Here's why.
If you actually carry it around a lot,
I thought you asked me to wait.
Oh no. WEI. Wait. The heaviness of the device is why you would buy that, or the lightness of the device.
No, there's another reason too, and what? That's the fan. There's a fan, and I'm sure it's a good one in the MacBook Pro, but here's my problem, is that I like to work and smoke a cigar. If I do that, those fans are going to suck it all in there, and over the period of a year, it's going to coat everything in there with a nice little layer of tar, and Apple will not even look at it.
Ah.
I've been there. I've done that. That's why I would never get a MacBook Pro number two. I'm not a pro user in that sense. I don't do enough work in Xcode to that be a problem. I do video and audio processing, but mostly audio. And I do just fine with a MacBook Air. I think I would really do well with a good old fashioned, you know, and the only thing I need really in an upgrade is better screen. And I would get that with a MacBook. And I like their aspect ratio is good. I like everything about it. So I'm good. I'm ready.
Yeah, I think so. The weight is really something if you're a traveler. It hadn't occurred to me that your cigar smoke issue.
Yeah. Not just that, though. Not just that. But let's talk about heat, too. Is that you and we live in pretty warm climates. In Texas in particular, if you actually work with a laptop on your lap, as the name implies, you will feel it with a lot of these machines. And the ones with the fans, they can get really hot. Now, the MacBook is probably going to generate some heat also, but I'm willing to deal with that. I don't think it would be as much because it just doesn't have the innards that would require, as much horsepower running under the hood. So I think I would do okay with that. I do pretty well with the MacBook Air, but let me tell you something. If I'm not in an air-conditioned environment and I'm using it, it will. I've had it and my iPad both say, we're turning off the device. It's too hot.
Ooh, really?
Well, Sarah, yes. your MacBook, your work MacBook is not that different to these new MacBooks. How have you found it for heat?
Well, I don't tend to sit with it actually on my lap, so I can't say I've really noticed it very much.
But it's never shut itself off.
Yeah, I've had both my MacBook and my iPad say adios. In the last month. That's what's also interesting. Okay. It's not even summer. So heat is definitely an issue. You will never hear about it from Apple because Apple lives in a bubble where the weather is always perfect.
And so is the internet.
Yeah, that's the problem. That, you know, there are a lot of assumptions that Apple makes for ease of use issues. And one of them is heat. They hide it in a black box. The other thing that they also do a lot of is connectivity. They assume everybody has terabyte connectivity, and terrible for us. But I understand why they're doing it. But I still don't like it.
I don't like it either. I think Apple is pretty bad at it. They're certainly not the only culprits, and I think a lot of companies who have, you know, super duper internet into their offices, they tend to assume that everybody's always connected and always got good speed and always got plenty of bandwidth to use. That irritates me.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons that Apple is having more difficulty in EDU, because there is a situation where, and I was in that market and developing software for EDU for a while, a few years ago, and the common complaint is our wireless and our internet access is crazy at schools. And, you know, it just totally is nuts. And that's what Google had trouble with this at first. And then, you know, they had a lot of trouble, like the Los Angeles scandal with all those iPads. You know, that was an issue there, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a big thing, and it does bite them in the butt sometimes. So it's not nothing. It's not just us. It's real. This complaint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what the other vendors do, Sarah, in fairness, is they have more gears you can get in and mess with. They usually have more switches and buttons, you know, and that makes their OS or their software or whatever a real problem, i.e. Windows, you know. But at least somebody, your IT guy, can come by and give you a little love. But there's no IT guy to come by with a Mac. It is what it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
Well, let's move back to WWDC. And Tim started off by saying, you know, they gave us so much of what we wanted. Was there anything that we didn't get? And what I would say is, while the iOS App Store got a lot of love, there was nothing about the Mac App Store. Although I did hear that in Gruber's, Gruber had a talk with, he had Phil Schiller and Craig Federighi on stage with him. And apparently Phil said the Mac App Store changes are coming or something, you know, winter is coming, whatever.
Yeah. Well, winter's coming, not in the Game of Thrones sense, I hope.
Let's hope not.
It's coming for us here.
I would have liked to see a bit more attention to the Mac App Store. It's really a second-class citizen.
Totally.
It doesn't get the analytics that the Mac apps get, that the iOS apps get, which confuses me because I would have thought that once they'd set them up for one platform, it was relatively easy to have them for the others.
Yeah.
It obviously doesn't have the graphical pizzazz that the iOS one has. It has got the fast review times again, so that's good.
Yes, it does.
But it's obviously due for some care and attention.
I totally agree with you. I think you're right about that 100%. Totally. Cool.
Actually, I'd like to be a bit churlish and say they announced a lot of nice stuff, but having waited this long, we now have to wait nearly 6 months for the Mac Pro and the how long was the wait for the iMac Pro?
That's 6 months.
December. Also December, and the HomePod that I want, I think that was way out in December, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, the Mac Pro, we don't know. I mean, no, they definitely said the Mac Pro wouldn't be this year.
That's right. Mac Pro, not this year.
But the iMac Pro and the HomePod are December, I think, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a long wait. Having waited this long, that's a long further wait. And it tells me something about the lead time for the design process for these things, because in my naivety, I actually thought they could design the whole thing in that amount of time.
There's a lot of pieces here. You know, when you say design, you can't get out of industrial design, and then you get into the lines they have to build for the factories, and it's an iceberg situation where you just see we just see the tip.
Yes, I'm sure you're right. I usually say that, but I am impatient for this new stuff. Hey, here's an offshoot question for you, Jerry. This HomePod, which I'm actually looking at on my iPhone screen here now, we'll get one of these things, but I notice the word stereo doesn't appear. And when you read it, what they're saying is we've got these directional tweeters, And we are going to simulate stereo by bouncing the tweeters off the walls with separation to give you a stereo effect. I'm really looking forward to hearing how good that is.
I'm fascinated.
They say it's wonderful.
I'm fascinated. It's an area that I think, if you're looking for my reaction, it's an area that's been ripe for let's face it, stereo is a very analog affair, right? It's very physical. It's very much grounded in the physics of reality. And I've always thought to myself, well, why are we doing it that way when we have so much processing power at our fingertips? Why aren't we doing this with firmware or software? There's so much more we can do. We have sensors now that can tell where you are in the room. So, and then they say if you have two of them, this thing, it's like on steroids. Now if you want to spend $700, now you will have an experience that is going to be like, you're a little worried that if the NSA gets a hold of this, we're in trouble. Right?
Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing what it's like. And Sarah's going to have to put up with me shouting at Siri to play all sorts of things while I test it out.
Well, let's talk about Siri. Let's get to Siri just for a second here. Now, Apple has taken a real beating over the last two years about, you know, deep learning, intelligent assistant. They don't have enough data to really do deep learning or AI well, et cetera, et cetera. And so now, you know, it's Siri. So now we have a limited Siri inside these speakers that you're talking about. And it's a musicologist, but it's not all the other things that it could be also. So my prediction is that a year from now, we are going to see some serious Siri. I think they're just waiting.
It is a lot more than just a musicologist. You can ask it for weather and news and sports results
Does it know context?
Yes.
Okay. That's the big one that I think they're really getting nailed on. They feel that's the hardest one to do without stealing everyone's private data.
Yeah, and that is so hard to do while trying to maintain privacy. One interesting thing, the other aspect of Siri is the voice. And the voice has had a huge improvement, much more natural sounding.
Yes, agreed. Agreed, totally.
Because we real humans have words, and you don't say the word exactly the same depending on the context of the sentence. And that's really hard for a computer to work out.
Yeah, quite. And I must throw in here that about 4 months ago, I changed my Siri voice to be Australian.
We had, what did we have? You know how at the start of a football game, somebody comes on and sings the national anthem, or a big game anyway. Well, there was one of those last year, and the lady who sang the national anthem was Siri. She was the real world lady whose voice was Siri.
Oh, really? Where does she hail from?
I think she isn't. Well, certainly for Australian Siri, she's an Australian.
Oh, it's Australian Siri. Oh, cool. Very cool. And that's another area. You know, I've always thought to myself, you know, they've got these A series chips, Apple. You know, there isn't much they can't do. And that's one of the little tips of the iceberg I look for with all the assistants that speak. I think to myself, well, when they start working really well, that's an indication that the rest of the iceberg has really got some muscle. My thoughts.
One thing that was clear in this keynote was emphasis on machine learning, which is, of course, backs series conversations and everything. But the other thing which I noticed them keeping harking onto was the better communications between your devices, so basically your iCloud account. So there have been complaints that you'd ask Siri a question on your iPhone, you'd get one set of answers, you'd ask on the Mac, and you'd get a completely different set of answers.
Right.
And
right.
This seemed weird. So I think now that there'll be a lot more consistency and a lot more, everything is going to be more consistent across your devices. I think message threads are going to sync better, and your Siri conversations are going to be more transferable.
Yes.
And everything like that.
And the learning, hopefully the learning will transfer between devices. I shouldn't have to teach each of these things what to do or how to do it.
Yeah, I think so. Because within your own iCloud account, they can transfer money, transfer information completely
yes.
securely.
And money.
It's only, and money too. Actually, that's Apple Pay, they are introducing this peer-to-peer Apple Pay. So, you know, you can pay your friends, your family, whatever, using Apple Pay just through messages.
Ooh, now that's a powerful thing they just did there. And, you know, that has the potential of offending some of these financial people. But I think there's enough of it being done everywhere by everyone that, and especially, again, in China and India, you know, where a lot of people just live on their messaging platform. And that's all they do.
That is
their life.
Indeed. This is U.S. only for the moment.
For the moment.
So I presume the banks are all screaming as they would. But the mechanics behind it are interesting. If you use messages and you send, you know, $10 to your friend, your friend either has it in a sort of a fake credit card in their phone that they can use at any Apple Pay, or they can pull it out to their bank account. So effectively, Apple's making your phone into a credit card.
Yes, it is. It is. And it's a huge thing. It didn't get the attention that I think it deserved, but I think maybe part of that was to keep the peace. I'm sure Apple told everybody that this touched in the financial areas that it was happening. And, you know, because that's the kind of news you don't want them to hear at a keynote. You want them to be prepared for that. So, they're doing stuff like that, just like Apple did with FaceTime. You know, that could have really offended a lot of phone guys, but they had such a phone companies. But that they had such a strong hold on the market, and they had so much leverage that I don't think they had to worry too much about it. But I'm sure they made it clear what they were doing. And, you know, it was my brother John, who has had an iPhone for quite a while now, is just in the last 3 months I've taught him how to use FaceTime. And he's stunned. He says, well, wait a minute. You mean this doesn't go against my minutes or anything? I said, no. And it was just sinking in. And he's an accountant. And he goes, wow, the phone company should be screaming about this. Because, you know, I've now got a way to, he has bad internet in his apartment building. So this is the answer to us talking on the phone. We just use FaceTime 100%, just like you and I, and the rest, you know, we do and have done. And it's excellent in bad. That's one of the areas where if you've got bad connectivity, don't worry. FaceTime, at least FaceTime audio can handle it.
Well, before FaceTime, messages really took the phone companies to the cleaners, because they were charging absolutely ridiculous fees for a text message, 25 cents or something per text message.
Yes.
And, you know, kids these days will do 100 text messages a day.
And
when that all just started to be data instead of this stupid 25 cents a text thing, that was huge.
Yeah, that was big too. And talk about Sherlocking. Yeah, they definitely got Sherlocked. And, you know, this latest thing that we're talking about with your phone becomes a credit card, there's a lot of third party groups and companies that just do that. Square Cash, you know, Venmo, you know, bunches of them have built, they got Sherlocked, I believe. Now they still got Android and Windows and all that stuff, but man, Apple just did a number.
They did, and as always, they do these things that hook you into the Apple ecosystem and make you want to stay there.
Yeah, you ain't leaving, that's for sure.
Yeah, the hardware, the lack of hardware updates had me nervous. The software kept me there, but now we're back in business.
Yeah, I think we totally are. I think as we said at the top of the show, we have definitely gotten our wish list. I'm trying to think. The only thing that I was whinging about that I didn't get was we didn't get a lot of love at the low end, but even before WWDC, we got the super cheap iPad, which is, I think, a big breakthrough. The full-size iPad for $329, that's really unbelievable. And
I would like to see the mini bump.
Say? Oh, yeah, the mini. There's a lot of talk about the mini dying, but it's still there. And there's a lot of talk about the MacBook Air dying, and it's still there. So no low-end, big low-end shakeup like I was talking about. There isn't one.
And the MacBook Air even got a speed bump.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Everybody got love. That's for sure. And then the MacBook got a bump also and got better specs and all that good kind
better
of
keyboard.
Stuff. Oh, yeah. Everything's better. You know, there's no doubt. Yeah, they got a lot of blowback on the keyboard for the MacBook. So that's better now, too. So it's all starting to look pretty darn good. I haven't seen a keyboard with what you call it, that magic strip. What's that called? Touch bar.
The touch bar. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something Sarah wanted, I think. We didn't see that.
I've ordered my new iMac, and there was not an option to have the keyboard with the touch bar, which I was a bit surprised at.
Yeah, and I noticed in the sexy photo of the iMac Pro that comes out in December, looking down on it, the keyboard doesn't have the touch bar on it.
Ooh.
It's a numeric keypad, but it doesn't have the it has the numeric keypad, but it doesn't have the touch bar, and I was surprised at that. I thought it would.
Yeah.
I thought it would too. That's odd. And they did lower the price of the MacBook Pro though, down to $1,299, which that's gonna fuel a lot of sales, so that's good. The low end did get some love, but not as much as I was thinking it would get. They made some big moves. And let's face it, the big move they needed to make was with the iPad. They made it in hardware prices, hardware quality, software, mostly software, I would say. That's the big news there. And
for the hardware, the big news, I think, was software. But as far as the Mac goes, it was the high end of the market that had been neglected. They really had to do the high end.
Yeah. Yeah. True. And, you know, a lot of people thought that Mac OS would get a Snow Leopard treatment, meaning meaning they will just tweak everything they've already got. I've heard so many commentators say, "Hey, Mac OS is a mature OS. We don't just add features to add features. You know, don't do what they've done with Microsoft Word over the last 30 years. You know, or Photoshop. Just really." Get rid of all the bugs, and that's what they're aimed at. I believe that in performance, they've got the new file system.
This is the Snow Leopard. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It
oh
is.
Yes, I know we should be wrapping up, but the file system, I think it is an amazing tribute to the Apple engineers that the new file system rolled out to every iPhone, and I have not seen a single report on the internet of anyone having troubles with it.
I haven't either.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I think that is just a stunning feat of engineering.
Well, they took years to do it.
They rolled it out to millions of iPhones in a day.
What Apple is doing in general, that is probably, again, we're talking the tip of the iceberg stuff. Yeah, that's a huge one, and one that gets very little love or attention in the press, but it really should. But think of, they are doing this stuff on such a huge, huge scale. Even the Mac business, which everybody goes, everybody's poo-pooing it. That's huge. That would be a big company if that were a separate company.
It would be a huge company, just on its own. But that's the biggest change, I think, coming in High Sierra is that the new file system, which is going to make a combination of that plus metal being used for all the basic system animations. That means things like basic disk operations, Finder, everything is going to be enormously better performance.
The one thing that gets a bit technical, but Sarah, I wanted to run this by you when I heard it. What Riattle did with their drag and drop, they're doing that with web servers on each app.
Really?
Huh. Yes. And this is a big thing because this is something you and I have many conversations about, and that is iOS apps are incapable of listening, really. They are subject to the whims of notifications. And that's about as far as it goes when it comes to inter-app communication. They let Riattle put a web server on each app. Now, if that was just a one-time thing for their drag and drop as a recognition of the hard work they've done and letting them know this, hey, you're not going to need this in a few months. But whatever, if that sticks and that is something we can do in the future, then the nature of iOS apps could change pretty drastically. Things like peer-to-peer and what have you would get a lot easier. So I'm fingers crossed, and I'd like you to keep your eyes open because you're more in touch with the iOS development community than I am. But if that sticks and we're able to do that, that will change things that we can't imagine at the moment.
I assume they've just done that through a shared container, which you can do if you own all the apps. You can make them all use a shared container, and I assume that's how they were doing them. But
they have to listen, though. Operationally, they still have to listen.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, it's very. I mean, they were terribly clever to have done it. It's just their timing. Well, I guess it would have been worse if their timing had been 2 weeks later.
Yeah. Now, one other thing that I thought of, and let's not worry about the time because we're having too much fun. Tim, you said something earlier, and this is where I think it's going to go with the, what do we call those? Oh, Airport Extreme, et cetera. I think the move here is, if they can do it, is for Apple to buy Eero. I really think that's the future of how we do things wirelessly. I really like mesh networks in general. And I think Eero has done an unbelievable job. When you have these installed in your home, your bandwidth actually gets better everywhere in your house or your compound.
Yeah, well, I kind of expected that Apple would Sherlock Eero in this WWDC. So that was one of, for me, that was one of the things that was missing them.
But the last thing we heard was they were shutting down their Wi-Fi, their Airport Express business.
Well, that doesn't contradict what we're talking about. If they were to acquire
it,
it would be a completely different device.
Somebody. Yeah.
It would be a completely different device. I don't think they would have to give them the same treatment that they have given, other folks like
Beats.
Yeah, Beats. That's who I was talking about. Well, hey, I got a bell there. I must have said it right.
Well, Eero apparently, I mean, obviously we haven't got it, it's US only at the moment, but from everything I've read, it's terribly Apple-like in the way you set it up and even the way it looks. So, yeah, it's definitely a good fit.
Yeah, I think
whether
I think
Apple buys them out or just starts selling, selling them in all their Apple stores instead of their own gear.
Well, I think that's the next thing to look at as far as the near term goes. And so I think, Tim, I think what we were talking about so many months ago, I think something's going to happen. It's ripe. The area is ripe. And it explains why they might be dropping the old lines of, extremes, Airport Extremes, et cetera.
Okay. Well, I hope so. I hope so soon.
Yeah, me too. I'm ready. What else? Anything else we got? The things you didn't see that you wanted to see?
Things I didn't see? No, I can't think of anything right now. Like I said, the Mac App Store was the big thing that I didn't see. And I was just so thrilled at the iMac Pro even though I'm not in that market, just to see them actually embracing the pro market again was so great.
Yeah, and they did do it again with the iPad, you know, just to repeat ourselves. I think that's a huge move. And, you know, there's a growing number of people like Federico Battici who are really doing serious work on their iPads, and they're using all kinds of stuff in order to do it. And, you know, I think, well, didn't Apple buy Workflow?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good sign there. And there are people who are worried about that, thinking it won't improve, but it has already. So I think that's one less
worry. Well, there were a few mixed signals in that Apple said there would be no more improvements, and then about a month later there was an update. So hard to follow that one.
Yeah, that's big. As far as the iPad Pros, you know, so we're talking about Pro, but in this case it doesn't mean professional. I think it means productivity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just
how about that file system? A file system, you guys.
A file system, yes. That's what you and I were talking about just a couple of weeks ago, how us old-fashioned types like to be able to see the files.
Well, they did it in a very, very slick way, and they didn't leave anyone out. That's what I really like.
And
Box,
you can
Dropbox.
Even put that. Yeah, and you can put that file browser in your own apps, too.
Yes, API, thank you. Very much. Mm-hmm. Very much. Oh,
yes.
Yeah, we're headed for the promised land. No problem. We're headed there.
Yep.
Tim, what do you think? Got anything that they didn't do for you other than the airport stuff?
No, I've done all my complaining.
Wow, it looks like we're going to be happy campers for at least a while, huh?
Yep.
I think so, yep.
All right, well, good show. Good talk. Yeah, good work, guys.
Nice talking to you, Jerry.
Good talking to you, Jerry. And
all right.
Talk to you next time.
All right, adios.